And I'm hoping the yes, I love that song, but I don't want to compete with Bob Marley here. So anyway, once again, I'm Maria Hall. Co-host Jim Lafferty is on vacation. Yay for him, but we'll be back next week. And in the meantime, we've got a great show lined up for you today. I'll be talking in depth to two immigration lawyers from different parts of LA County about the latest that's going on with the ICE raids and our community's response. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Well, if you're in LA County right now and on any of those neighborhood apps, you're probably like me getting inundated with messages reporting where ICE vehicles are circling around the neighborhoods like sharks, around car washes, schools, Walmarts, churches, swap meets. In Southeast LA where I am, it feels like we're being occupied by a band of bounty hunters. Still, I have hope that this too shall pass. For one thing, these operations are already $1 billion over budget, so we know they can't go on indefinitely. But way more important than that, our communities are coming together like never before to stand up against injustice. On June 14th, hundreds of thousands of people in the LA area came out to protest against government tyranny and in support of humanity, fairness, and morality. So today I'll be spending the hour talking with two immigration lawyers, Maria Zavaleta and Rolando Fuentes, and they're from different parts of LA County, and they're going to be telling us about what they're seeing on the ground, some of the legal issues, and of course, how the community is coming out to speak on behalf of those who cannot. And by way of introduction, immigration lawyer Maria Zavaleta is in the South Bay area. She worked as a community organizer before pursuing her career in law and serves in leadership roles with the American Immigration Lawyers Association, ALA, Northern California chapter, and the Alameda County Bar Association, and volunteers with the National TPS Alliance. And Rolando Fuentes is an immigration lawyer in San Fernando Valley. Rolando actually started working at an immigration law firm when he was just 18 years old, and he liked it so much that he decided to become an immigration lawyer and open up his own firm, which he now has. So in that capacity, he helps people from all over the world with immigration issues. Welcome back to the Lawyers Guild Show, Rolando Fuentes and Maria Zavaleta.
Thank you.
And you're, yes, Maria, you're still on mute, but it's okay. I'm going to jump into questions. Sure. So let's jump right into what's happening on the ground right now with the ICE raids, including, of course, the racial profiling that we're seeing run rampant and the community's response. So, Rolando, let's start with you. You're in the San Fernando Valley area. What's been going on there? You know, who's been targeted? How are people responding? And how are people staying safe?
Well, in the San Fernando Valley, it pretty much seems to be part of what has happened nationwide, where it's, I mean, it's hard to avoid it or not say it, but it seems like the Latino community is the one that's being picked on. All the raids and everything that you hear here seem to be mainly in the areas where Latinos live and work. Right here, for example, there's areas of Pacoima, Silmar, Panorama City, Canoga Park. Those are where you hear and see the ICE and raids happening all the time. There's other areas here, for example, Encino, Porter Ranch, there are a lot wealthier, but you don't hear anything happening in those areas. Even though they still have the same type of businesses, car washes and other things, you don't see any of that happening going on there. So it's difficult to ignore it because it seems like we're being picked on, but it is happening. You know, the way the community responding seems to be putting most of us together and pulling us together. I see a lot of social media pages and groups where they're informing each other or where they see raids, where they see immigration, where they're parking, where they're living or staying at to avoid those areas and help out each other. Sometimes it does create a little bit of havoc and panic because people are sometimes announcing police or sheriff or other activity that has nothing to do with ICE and creates a little bit of more of a fear. But at least in my mindset, it's better to be safe than sorry. So as long as you don't really have anything to do in those general areas at the moment, avoid it at all costs, at least at the moment, and stay home and stay safe.
Maria Savaletta, you're in the South Bay. So, what's the latest over there, and how are people staying safe? What are you seeing?
Yeah, thank you, Maria. I echo everything Rolando said. I mean, I definitely do believe that a lot of folks are organizing together to inform community of any ICE activity and helping, community who might be at risk. But I also think that everyone is responding in unity to these ICE raids, organizing, sending the government the message that an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us, right? And at least here in Los Angeles, Angelenos are not going to stand by and watch ICE separate families. There's been rallies and marches in Paramount and Hawthorne and Pasadena, downtown LA, you name it. And I saw an article yesterday by the Economic Times that said that the No Kings June 14th protest is now being it's now believed to be the biggest protest in US history. So they're estimating that about 4 to 6 million people nationally join. So that goes to show how much people are, not going to stand by and watch family separation. And to what Rolando was saying, although the government is quote unquote looking for criminals, they're going to places of work like car washes. They're targeting people that are working. And it's very hard to, see the effects that it's causing on our clients.
Well, Maria Savaletta, turning back about a week and a half ago, on the morning of June 7th, it was Saturday morning, you were trying to meet with people detained in downtown LA along with some Congress members. Can you talk about that experience? Tell listeners why you were there and then what happened to you all?
Yeah, as you all know, on Friday, June 6th was when the ICE raids started intensifying. I reached out to a friend of mine at a known nonprofit if there was any support that was needed, and she said, "Come to B18 at 8 a.m. on Saturday." So I went to, I think as immigration lawyers, we have to use our knowledge and our tools to help people, especially in these times of need, So I was there with other attorneys from known nonprofits in the area that were going to meet with prospective clients that were in detention that had gotten detained the Friday before. And four members of Congress were there with us. And just for listeners, members of Congress, they can enter this facility, the detention facility, to conduct oversight by federal law. They have to be allowed. And I'm sure people have seen in social media, Jimmy Gomez's attempt. Jimmy Gomez was with us on Saturday morning. Other Congress people on Sunday tried to enter these facilities and be denied entrance, again in violation of federal law. And attorneys that were there to meet with prospective clients, we were also denied entry. So we were outside of the Metropolitan Detention Center. There weren't any, it was just a few attorneys, Congress people, a few media people, and we couldn't. They were blocking our ability to see, but we could hear people being loaded into vans because you could hear chains. So we were screaming, "People, don't sign anything," as to speak to an attorney. If you're fearful of returning, ask for fear interview. So we were just telling people, informing people of their rights as attorneys, and it felt like that was the only thing we could do in that moment. And so at some point, the drivers of the vans, they started honking, presumably to stop people in the vans from hearing what we're saying. But then shortly after that, they deployed some type of chemical irritant. And everyone, including the members of Congress, we started, coughing, and I had mucus running down my face, and it was irritating that they that this happened. Obviously, if this is how they're treating attorneys and members of Congress, how are they treating, folks that are detained? And later in the week, we saw, Senator Padilla on the floor being arrested. And so, again, if this is how they're treating us, attorneys, members of Congress, how are they treating folks who are detained? Why are they not letting the members of Congress into this building to conduct oversight? What is, it begs a lot of questions. And so that's what happened that morning.
Yeah, so it's for people seeing these kinds of things on social media. I mean, I just happened to run into Maria Sauvalleta later that day, and she was still coughing. So it's like definitely affecting people that we see, people. It's affecting all of us. So yesterday, ICE announced they'd once again be conducting raids at farms, restaurants, and hotels, even though a few days earlier, Trump had said, no, we're not going to do that anymore because we're deporting good people who work hard, who can't be replaced. So anyway, what are your thoughts about this whiplash reversal, this sort of about face? Is there any rhyme or reason to these policies, and what does it say about this administration? Let's start with Rolando.
Oh, honestly, it doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason on why they do stuff. It looks like they just, at least the government wants to say what people want to listen to, but overall, they don't move away from the target, which is seems to be deportation and mass deportation. I mean, if you look at what they've been doing pretty much the whole time they've been in power recently, they say one thing and they do what's convenient for them and what they want, and then they kind of ignore everything else. And when their people start making noise, they kind of say something to appease them, but they still continue. So, I mean, I don't really see, honestly, the only reason I would see them stopping this type of work that they're doing and discrimination, deportation, and everything else is when they run out of money, because there's really no reason for them to stop. They seem to have no mechanism to stop them. They're supposed to be the Supreme Court and the Senate and all these other things, but they seem to be bent over backwards for them, at least at the moment. And there's really no reason why they should stop. Whatever they do, they don't really face any real repercussions, so they just continue pushing and pushing the limits of what they can do. They don't seem to be working the way most adults and politicians have worked before, where there's certain social norms and social standards that people follow. They don't need to be written in the laws, the regulations, the rules, but they don't seem to follow that. They want to do what they want to do when they want to do it, and they won't stop until they're actually forced. You can see it with the individual that was deported to El Salvador. It took them forever to come back, until they were actually forced. Even after being forced, they took a while to come back, only to come back and face additional charges for stuff he wasn't faced before. So they seem to not want to lose face. They want to just continue to show individuals in a bad light. And I think they're, like I said, they won't stop until they run the money, because that seems like the only real way they're going to be able to be stopped.
Maria Savaletta, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, you see the effects that, everything that's happening is having on, small businesses in downtown LA, the arts district, the fashion district, and eventually, right, like the business people are gonna feel like, oh, this is affecting my pockets. And who knows, maybe his Trump's friends did some advocacy and we're like, hey, this is affecting our business. And maybe that's what caused them to briefly say that they were not going to conduct raids on farms, restaurants, and hotels. And then obviously that didn't appease his base. And so this is all me presuming, but there's never any rhyme or reason to things that this administration does. I wish I knew. But yeah.
Yeah, well, one ray of hope, I think we can all agree on Saturday, June 14th, as we mentioned, hundreds of thousands of people in Southern California, really hard to measure because there was the big rally in downtown, but then there are all these little neighborhood rallies that were really impressive and very positive, very affirming of life and morality. And then, of course, a major theme was seeing a lot of signs that were, I'll just say, without using four-letter words, critical of ICE. There were a lot of four-letter words on signs, but I'm just going to say they were critical and disagreeing with tactics. So, yeah, and in general, I describe the crowds as being very sympathetic to immigration in general. So, again, from your perspective as community immigration lawyers, are these public displays of support any consolation to people who are living in fear right now? Knowing that your neighbors are there, but knowing that the government, too, at the moment anyway, is not behaving in a lawful manner. Maria Zavaleta, I know you marched on June 14th with a lot of other lawyers, Mexican American Bar Association, Latina Lawyers Bar Association, the LA County Bar Association. Tell us about that, and what is your sense about whether this is helpful?
Yeah, I think it was really beautiful to see how everybody came together, obviously in support of our immigrant communities. I think a lot of people, like in the Mexican American Bar Association, for example, not everybody's an immigration lawyer. People practice other areas of law, but I think we can all agree, like I said, that an attack on one of us is an attack on all of us. And it was really inspiring to see how community came out in support of folks who maybe couldn't be there because of that threat of, they're scared and they stayed at home. I actually saw some people on social media posting, things saying thank you for supporting and like attending these marches. And so, when I drove home and home for me is not is in the South Bay, I saw smaller rallies too. One of them was in Hawthorne, where the person that was 36 week pregnant, I believe, was had an interaction with ICE. And so in that same area where it happened, people had this rally, and you can hear the cars honking, and whether it be showing up at the protest or donating to nonprofits that are, helping folks that are detained. People are doing something, and I think that's beautiful to see.
Yeah, and I know a lot of non-immigration lawyers are asking how they can help. I think maybe one of the best ways is probably to give money to organizations that are really on the ground. But Rolando, you were going to unmute.
At least in my personal experience with relatives, friends, and clients, in Los Angeles and big cities, this is kind of expected, the reaction, the support, and everything like that. But I think this really helps out people who are out in smaller communities, smaller cities in other states. I've talked to people, for example, in states like Missouri, Michigan, even Florida, where they're not big cities. Massachusetts, where they feel at least some hope that this will stop soon, and this is helping them keep morale up, because they see that this it's not the way it's portrayed. In other places, at least, well, Los Angeles, because there's so many of us, it's such a big population, we kind of have a different view of the rest of the country. Okay, so I think we inspire people and give them hope by doing all this, because they see that it's not as bad as they think. For example, when I was in Florida recently, you get portrayed like everybody wants you out. We don't want illegals here, we don't want undocumented individuals here, and they don't say it in very nice terms. But seeing this activity, these protests and everything, that it's nationwide, it gives them hope that this is gonna stop. I mean, I've even seen people talk about, well, hopefully they realize the importance that undocumented individuals provide to the economy and society overall. There's hopefully some sort of immigration reform to help fill these jobs that many people won't do. So I think overall, all these actions inspire individuals, but we should also keep in mind to continue to do it, Because it doesn't, it affects us here, it affects the whole country.
Wow, what a great point. That yeah, here in LA, I had people on the radio show a couple of years back that are saying, yeah, people here are very activist as far as immigration. But yeah, then having people who ne aren't necessarily in such a welcoming community seeing that no, in the United States, there are a lot of people of conscience who do believe in human rights and do not believe that people should be treated as they're being treated right now. So on that note, ideally in a civilized quote unquote society, it's always you want to strive so that everyone knows what the laws are, knows what the consequences are for breaking the rules if they decide, and then making an informed choice about whether to obey or whether to not obey and then face consequences. But right now, the news is reporting that some people who are following all the rules, all the immigration rules, they're going to their hearings. They're the ones that are making their court dates, they're the ones telling everyone where they are. They seem to be the ones most at risk for being arrested by ICE. And yet, if they decide not to go to a court hearing, then I understand that they can get a warrant and be arrested for that too. So it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Is that what you're seeing? Is that true? Rolando, why don't you start us off? Shed some light on that and also let us know if there are options or, how people are even dealing with that dilemma.
Unfortunately, this is a very difficult position to be in because this is exactly what's going on. People are trying to follow the systems that's been set up, the rules and everything that they've been told they need to follow to obtain legal status here, or at least get their case heard. And it's not working that way. So, for example, there's a lot of individuals that are caught at the border or who apply for asylum at the border. And so they're told to go to court and do these other things. What immigration is doing at the moment is they're canceling their cases like they were never detained, and they're being arrested. The reason they're being arrested is that because you can't be arrested until while you have a case pending with immigration. So when they cancel the case, technically they don't have anything pending, so they can just be detained. So these individuals are following the rules, what they have to do. They go to court, they find out their case is no longer is terminated, and their happiness lasts only a few moments because the moment they step out of the courtroom, there's somebody waiting for them. Unfortunately, this happened nationwide, so it seems to be a strategy that immigration is using all over the country. There's also been reports of individuals who have like check-ins, which means the immigration system is it's there's a huge backlog and there's not enough judges and stuff to get people through it. So some of them take years and years for them to actually be heard. So some individuals have to do an annual checkup or every few months. And what's going on is some of these individuals seem to be showing up, they're being arrested and detained there. The horrible part is not this, it's not only that, is that they're being transferred to places where there's no support. So, for example, let's say you were arrested in Los Angeles, you'll get transferred to Florida, you'll get transferred to New Jersey, to another state where there's no support for you. So you can't see your family members. It's hard to get an attorney, it's hard to get any type of assistance. And honestly, a lot of people get desperate because they know it's gonna be difficult for them. So many are willing to sign the deportation because they're not willing to stay in jail for, I mean, it's supposed to be under 6 months, but I've not actually seen anybody stay there longer, but that's what a lot of people are doing. So it's hard to follow and advise people because there's no, it's hard to guarantee they're going to be safe. So for example, there's people here in Los Angeles who just happened. They'll show up one day. Next day, people will do this exact same thing with fear that they're going to be arrested and nothing happens to them. So there's no rhyme or reason. There doesn't seem to be anything because sometimes they've had arrested, sometimes they had prior immigration cases, sometimes they haven't, sometimes they've just been here within the last 2 years, sometimes they've been here over 10 years, and there doesn't seem to be any reason. The only thing I can assume is that maybe there's the quota they're not meeting and they need people arrested. And unfortunately, these individuals are just unlucky that they showed up when they did. But it is happening, so it's hard to for anybody because you don't know what to follow. Again, if you go, you're risking being arrested. If you don't go, then they're definitely issue an order of deportation. And then next time you get caught, there's no more trial, there's no more detainment, you're going to be deported unless you can show there was something out of your control. And just saying I was scared of being deported or detained is not a reason.
Yeah, and Maria Zavaleta, can you expand on that too? As, for example, people seeking asylum, they are here completely legally, but then aren't they still facing this danger?
Yeah, I mean, people, like Rolando said, are going through the legal pathway that's provided by the law for them to seek asylum. And so if, you know, most of the people that we're seeing, you know, where their cases get dismissed and then they are later detained are people who have lived in the U.S. for less than 2 years or who were initially apprehended near the border and then released by ICE during that same time frame. And so what the strategy seems to be is that the government attorney will dismiss the proceedings in order for them to immediately be apprehended by ICE and then placed on what's called expedited removal proceedings, which is a much faster process than the standard immigration proceeding that they were first in. And so, you know, this is happening to people of all ages, including kids. And so, as Rolando mentioned, it's hard to be in this position because obviously you're following the law by going to court to seek asylum. And yet if you don't go because of this fear, you might be issued a removal order due to that absence. It's called an in absentia removal order. So it's very important that people talk to their attorneys or, you know, call attorney referral line and try to get advice. But missing a court hearing is a bad thing too. I think Rolando would agree with that. Yeah, it's a very tough position.
Yeah, and you know, one of the most tragic things, I mean, the idea that our society before had, or at least a lot of immigration lawyers, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but had said, like, no, you can bring a civil lawsuit, for example, if somebody wrongs you, you know, your citizenship status doesn't matter, you know, you should still be safe in the courts. And as well as law enforcement, they say, yes, we want you to report if you're a victim or a witness of a crime. We don't care about your citizenship status because it's a public safety benefit to have cooperation like this with people fearing. So have you seen that, people not wanting to come forward anymore? And what are sort of the impacts on that?
From what I have seen or the reports that I have heard of, you know, people, there has been some talk about seeking motions so that people could appear at the hearings virtually or what's called WebEx in the immigration court context. Arguing that, you know, because of this fear of ICE in the courtroom. However, from what I have seen, there has been reports where the judges will say, counsel, you can appear via WebEx, but your client has to be there in person, which is like, you know, it totally defeats the purpose. So, yeah, you know, it's a hard position to be on because people have to attend their hearings. Otherwise, they will be issued a removal order due to their absence. And yet, obviously, it seems like the argument of judge, please allow us this client to appear virtually because they're scared that ICE will detain them is not one that I think is working. So it's a hard place.
Mm. Well, if you're just tuning in, this is the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Maria Hall. I am talking with Maria Zavaleta and Rolando Fuentes. They are both immigration lawyers. Maria is in South Bay and Rolando is in San Fernando Valley. We're just talking about what's going on. Please stay tuned. We're going to take a very brief station ID break and then we'll be back and we're going to talk about some more of these issues and kind of more about the policies as well, because we do need to look forward. This too shall pass and we need to figure out how we can make sure this does not happen again. So we will be right back.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and on the web at kpfk.org, Pacifica Radio for all of Southern California and beyond.
All right. Well, thanks, Bob Marley. We are back. I'm Maria Hall. My co-host Jim Lafferty is on vacation. Yay for him. He deserves a break. But in the meantime, we are talking today with immigration attorneys Maria Zavaleta and Rolando Fuentes about what's going on out here with all these ICE raids and, of course, the beautiful protests that are happening all over. So Maria Zavaleta, we were just talking about, you know, the dilemma of, you know, do you go to your court hearing or do you not go to your court hearing? And both are fraught with risk of, you know, potentially being arrested and or otherwise deported, removed. So Maria, can you tell us some of the special challenges for people with kids? How are families especially being harmed by this administration's immigration policies, including children who are definitely not these criminals that, you know, they were supposed to be going after?
Yeah, Maria. So in the subject that we had been discussing about, you know, the government dismissing proceedings, especially for people who have been in the country for less than 2 years, and then ICE waiting in the lobby to, again, detain folks and place them in expedited removal proceedings. You know, that the dismissal of an immigration hearing effectively means if that person hasn't yet gotten a relief option outside of immigration court, they're effectively undocumented still. So this is why ICE can detain them as soon as they walk out of the courtroom. Well, for kids, you know, a lot of attorneys for some, many of the kids qualify for something called special immigrant juvenile status, for example, or asylum with their family members. But in the subject of special immigrant juvenile status, you have to get these orders from the state court saying this kid has been either abused, abandoned, or neglected by either one or both of the parents, and it's in this child's best interest to be in the United States. Those are determinations that can only be made by the state court. Generally, once you have those predicate orders and you submit the application for the special immigrant juvenile status, you can seek dismissal of the immigration court proceedings or administrative closure, which is to remove that case from the active docket. In my experience, the judges will dismiss the cases or have dismissed the cases to move forward with the special immigrant juvenile status with USCIS, which is a different branch of immigration. And so the problem, though, is that even though, you know, the application may be pending, it might take some time for it to be approved. And this month, the government said that they weren't going to give deferred action to these kids anymore. And so obviously that puts these kids in a hard position where they don't have this deferred action. And if they're still waiting for their priority date to become current to be able to apply for the green card, they still don't have any real protection. And so what has been reported is that, you know, DHS or the Department of Homeland Security is now working with in conjunction with the Department of Health and Human Services or the Office of Refugee Resettlement. And they are now attempting to, quote unquote, locate and verify the safety of a previously released unaccompanied child who they're saying, quote unquote, may be residing at this address. And so they're going to the homes of people who the Office of Refugee Resettlement reunited these kids with, okay? So presumably it's because they're trying to see, they're conducting these welfare checks to see if this kid has status. If they don't, they're likely going to detain the kids and whoever else is there who doesn't have status. So this is something that, you know, it's developing, but a lot of clients have been receiving these notes in their doors.
Can you repeat again what the notices are saying?
Yeah, they're saying the Department of Homeland Security is working in conjunction with the Department of Health and Human Services slash Office of Refugee Resettlement, and is attempting to locate and verify the safety of a previously released unaccompanied alien child who may be residing at this address. And so, this is something, an attempt that they are now doing to see, to apprehend.
And then I assume if anyone gets a letter like that, they should contact legal,
Most
count
definitely,
legal help.
yes. Yes. Most definitely.
Wow. Rolando, on the status of kids and these do you have something to add on that?
Well, another major issue their parents are having is the one our parents were undocumented here who have kids born here. So many are under the belief that they either can't take their kids or the government won't let them take it. They're worried about who's gonna take care of them if they're deported or detained. So there's a lot of issues that individuals are facing and are hopefully are preparing because if it does come up, it's hard to deal with. Once you're detained, it's hard to try to provide authorization to somebody to take care of your kids, take them to school, take them to the doctor, do these other things. Especially with the one right now in the San Fernando Valley, I get calls from individuals. They're even scared to go to the market. They're buying market stuff through the what's it, DoorDash or stuff like that through the market, but it's a lot more expensive. It's something they can't afford to do continuously. They're scared to take their kids to school, even though school's out, but some kids are going to summer school. So there's a lot of fear at the moment from the parents because they can't do a lot of the stuff that they want to do. And these are like normal everyday stuff, going to the market, going to a doctor, putting gas, stuff like that. They have to be coordinating now. There's some I at least some of the parents I talked to are scared of having both parents at the same time with the kids. They want to be separated in case something happens. One gets detained, the other one is not. They talk to family members. It's a full-blown plan that they're trying to make. Hopefully it's not needed, but it's issues that they're facing at the moment that it's hard to prepare for. How you talk to your kids, especially when they're little, your mom might not come around for a short while, your dad's gonna be gone, I mean, there's some videos that you see of these kids crying with their parents, their parents are being detained in front of them. So it's something that can potentially be very traumatic also. And these are issues that people are facing at the moment with kids. And at least as attorneys, it's hard to prepare them because you don't know what's gonna happen, You try to give them advice legally, what they do. Like, for example, don't miss courts. Find family members who can potentially do take responsibility for your kids, access to money, your mortgage, because all this other stuff, whether somebody's detained or not, it's going to continue. You got to pay your cell phone, you got to pay rent, you got to. So prepare for these issues, but it's hard to prepare them because you never know what's going to happen. And also, a lot of these things are person specific. Some kids have special needs, some kids don't. They have allergies. They have, all these other issues that people don't normally know unless you're their parent. So it's becoming a very serious social issue because, imagine if you can't take your kids to the doctor or to the checkups and stuff like that. It's going to become a big issue.
Maria, I know you have something to add.
Yeah, I would just, encourage people to seek a legal consultation with a licensed attorney. Maybe your circumstances have changed, who knows, but definitely talk to somebody about your specific case and learn your rights. Get some of those red cards from the Immigrant Legal Resource Center's website. The ILRC or the Immigrant Legal Resource Center also has a really good family preparedness plan that I know that is being distributed by other nonprofits. And come to the LA Law Library. Here's a plug for the Friday consults, and ask questions. Right, Maria Hall, you can talk a little bit more about that, but I think it's a good place for people to start if they are interested in a family preparedness plan or have some questions about their rights and risks.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, there's a Laura's in the library clinic. one Friday a month. And a lot of the organizations, you know, Betsedic, I'm blanking on some of Chirla, you know, a lot of them have, you can even Google like powers of attorney and guardianship nomination forms. So there are these forms where you can have in advance sort of who thinking of who you want to take care of your kids. You know, is it their aunt? Is it their neighbor? You know, so you can kind of designate some of these things in advance. But yes, definitely talk to lawyers about that. There are a lot of efforts out there to help people with that very personalized plan. Now, Maria, I wanted to touch on Maria Zavaleta. You're also very connected to the Bay Area. I know you were there working for many years. Are they also experiencing, you know, have you been in touch with immigration lawyers there? Are they still experiencing the same heavy-handed targeted enforcement that we are here in LA? And are there other tactics that may be, you know, portents of what's to come here or vice versa?
Yeah, I think, you know, immigration lawyers are seeing a lot of similar issues with their clients in the Bay, from old cases being recalendared and attorneys trying to assess the best way to respond to that. And by recalendar earlier, I mentioned that a case could either get dismissed in immigration court or administratively closed, which means that the case is not in the active docket. So there's a lot of cases out there that are only administratively closed because, say, the person has TPS or DACA. And so it saves judicial resources to just close administratively the proceedings. But the proceedings are still, it's not a complete dismissal. So we're seeing a lot of, you know, recalendaring done by the government. And so oftentimes there's people who, you know, attorneys who maybe lost contact with these clients or, you know, a lot of similar issues that are being discussed. Other things with enforcement efforts, for example, that has been talked about in the Bay that I haven't heard of happening here, but, you know, this is just from my perspective. In the Bay Area, on Friday of last week, it was reported that people received text messages saying to report to the ICEP office in San Francisco or the, you know, to or face a quote unquote infraction. So, you know, weekend reporting is unheard of. So presumably folks were worried that this meant mass arrests. But so, you know, these are things that could potentially also happen in the Los Angeles area, but from what I know has not yet. But as far as like the court process, it seems to be very similar issues.
Well, you mentioned DACA. Can you remind listeners what that means? And is it, it kind of strikes me that DACA and the TPS are kind of, people are living in this limbo state of where they're not totally, they're technically legal, but yet, so the government is not actively, or they were not anyway, actively trying to get them out of the country, but yet at any minute, the government could turn and start coming after them. Is that right?
Yeah. So DACA stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. And effectively people get the deferred action, which means, a safeguard from removal and a work permit. TPS is temporary protected status, and people get a work permit and also other benefits with that. Kind of similar, come from different. TPS was a bipartisan act of Congress that happened in the 90s. DACA was an executive action, and so, you know, they have different legal bearings. And but as far as, you know, the Trump administration and its take on DACA and TPS is that it wants to terminate TPS and that DACA is illegal. And so, you know, you, like I have spoken to you in the past, for me TPS is a topic very close to my heart because my half brother has TPS and my family members obviously worry about the future of TPS because of that. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of other families like mine that they worry about the future of whether it be DACA or TPS, because once, say, TPS for El Salvador gets terminated and folks are not protected or have any other means to adjust their status into one of a permanent resident, then they could all potentially end up back in removal proceedings. And so, or in removal proceedings if they were never in it. So that's that kind of thing.
And it highlights for me anyway this the complexity and how just the need for reform, you know, why, and obviously it's a lot of political wrangling, I think, and that's why there's these weird limbo statuses where people can never really feel stable. You know,
Yeah.
there,
And I
Rolando.
think people need to remember to, I'm sorry, I was just going to say,
Go ahead.
remember that people in DACA and TPS get vetted every single time they renew. You know, these are folks who are obviously not criminals and they pay taxes. And so it's people that are very highly vetted that deserve to have a pathway to permanent residency.
My experience, this seems to be programs that were in the hopes that a new pathway for these particular individuals would be open for them to become permanent residents. Fortunately, due po to politics and other things, it really never progressed beyond the first step. So it's very cautionary because TPS can be taken at any time if it's not renewed. So, for example, Venezuela, Haiti, and a bunch of other countries right now are losing this protection. And if these individuals haven't found some other way to legalize themselves, they're pretty much out of status. And like Maria said, if you know, if they were already in the process, they get put back in. If not, now they have all your information and they have everything. They have ways of putting you a lot quicker. And like she says, you get vetted. They do a check on you every time you renew. So a lot of individuals lose these programs for a DUI or any other type of arrest. Mainly, unfortunately, sometimes while it's pending, sometimes they won't even renew it. So you get stuck without anything, without actually being convicted. So, I mean, these programs are always at a risk of being taken away. Specifically, DACA, you know. The Trump tried to take it away, the first presidency. There was talks about taking it away now again. At the moment, just with the deportations, they seem to be taking up with the time and effort right now. So if that stops, there's always the worry that it's going to affect other things, especially DACA or TPS for other countries, where there's no real way for them to legalize themselves. And then they're stuck without anything.
Yeah, definitely shows the need for reform. I did want to touch on, oh, Maria, go ahead. I want to touch on one other thing too, but go ahead.
That's fine. I just wanted to briefly remind people who are on DACA, you can't apply to initially for DACA. You have to always renew. So do not let your DACA lapse. It's very important. I often see people who let their DACA lapse and they don't renew because for whatever circumstances, you know, please remember that you can't file for DACA initially anymore. You have to make sure you don't let your DACA lapse. And then for, you know, again, both people with DACA and TPS seek a legal consultation, especially if you have a child who's over the age of 21. If you haven't traveled with advance parole, talk to someone, you know, if knowledge is power. And I think that right now there might be some things available that might not be available in the future.
Wow, great point. And I do love that you said knowledge is power. That's why we're saying this. It's not all good news, but you know that we have to know about it before we can fix it. And of course, better to know what's going on to protect ourselves and our loved ones and our neighbors. So let's talk for just a minute about the First Amendment, the freedom of speech and assembly, and the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, including the rights of lawyers to defend their clients. So we know this administration is hell-bent on deporting as many people as possible, but also they seem to be making a big deal about punishing people who are trying to help them, help the people they are trying to deport. So even a judge, that was pretty shocking for me. Arresting the judge who pointed out an alternate exit from the courtroom. They arrested her, handcuffed her, and there seemed to be like they're going to try to prosecute her. And now they're threatening one of our premier organizations, CIRLA, with an inve threatening that they're going to investigate them. And, you know, but there are so many lawsuits against the Trump administration, including the American Bar Association, which is suing the Trump administration for intimidation and retaliation against lawyers. And they are actually using the First Amendment. They're saying that this administration is violating the First Amendment rights of lawyers who are trying to just defend their clients. So, in the meantime, what is the overall impact on you all, on immigration lawyers? I mean, it's already a hard job. Rolando, let's start with you. I mean, is it, do you ever consider, you know, geez, why did I choose this area? Maybe I should just be a personal injury lawyer or something. What, how do you stay strong?
You know, I think people who do immigration law do it because it's something personal in nature. They don't necessarily do it for the money, or it's not one of the main factors, because it's very emotion. You also become kind of like the focus or anchor for many individuals because they don't have anybody else to look for. So, for example, a lot of my clients who come here, if they need any type of assistance for anything else, the first thing they call is me. They want with Social Security, with an accident, with law school, with colleges, for whatever they call. So I think it's something more of personal in nature, at least for me. And I can pretty safely say most attorneys in big cities, it doesn't really affect us as much. I think where it's affecting individuals is in smaller places. Like you see in these immigration attorneys groups and NALA and these other things, a lot of individuals are getting hate mail. You know, they're getting threats, they're getting bad reviews, they're getting all kinds of things attacking them personally because they're helping out immigrants. You know, and we're not doing anything illegal. We're the ones we have to stand up to a higher, I guess, degree to the law because we have our licenses and we know the law better. But these individuals are being threatened personally. So I think it become very emotional draining. But for most of us, like I said, it's personal. So we get inspirations from our clients, from our friends, our family to continue to do this and to help out individuals. Because it's something that we want to do, and regardless of, I guess, circumstances, we're going to do it anyway. So, you know, we're not going to really get scared off real quick.
Well said. How about you, Maria Zavaleta?
Yeah, I agree. I feel like to do this work sustainably, obviously you have to come from it from a place of like, you know, you have this passion and you're advocating for your clients while also taking care of your own mental health. And when, you know, you started hearing about the threats that the administration was going to come after immigration attorneys, and you know, it's a little daunting. It's heavy to hear and kind of scary, but you know, at the end of the day, you have to have this conviction that you're doing your job and you're helping folks through a process that they might not otherwise be successful navigating without your support. And you're not doing anything illegal. You're doing your job, you know? So I think that's what this job requires.
And Maria, well, I know how old you are, if you don't mind telling people how old you are. I mean, you're pretty young and so accomplished, but as you know, a lot of times on the Lawyers Guild show, we have people who are much older than you. So I kind of want to get also your, and Rolando, you're young too. You're a little older than Maria, but you're younger than me, so that means you're young. But I would love to hear from both of you, and maybe in Rolando too, like have your, you know, your kids, like how, you know, as a young person and as a parent of young people, I mean, how do you feel in this moment? You know, do you feel like, yes, I was born for this fight? Or do you feel like, geez, you know, Rolando, you unmuted first.
To me, it just gives, I honestly think it gives me further inspiration to continue to do the work. Like, I have two kids. Well, I have three, but two who understand stuff. They're 11 and 10. And they start to ask about, well, how come this person can't do this? And how come they're chasing them? And he come and do their. So they're trying to understand, specifically, for example, when all this stuff started in LAUSD, a lot of kids miss school the first couple of days, you know, when they start all this stuff start happening going on. And they're telling me, I don't know what happened, but half of my class wasn't there. You know, so it's hard to explain to them so they can understand it. But you know, I do the best I can, but they see the injustice in it. You know, if these people aren't doing anything bad, they're working, they're trying to maintain their family, they're helping out as much as they can, why would they be persecuted? Why would they be chased? Obviously, it wasn't started the best way, possibly by coming undocumented or overstaying or something like that. But overall, they're being an asset to society and they see it. Even as kids, they see it. So they don't understand why somebody would come and go after their friends' parents or relatives, even their own relatives or friends, because they're not doing anything bad. You know, they understand that if you do something bad, you need to be punished and all these other things. But if you're doing what you're supposed to, it's not fair. And I think that's what it comes down to, that nobody is against deportation and all these other things, except what we're mad about is that they're not getting their opportunity to get their case heard. They're following the rules and the regulations, the systems have been set up, and it's not being respected. They're being the program is being changed as they're in it, so they lose. You know, I believe President Barack Obama had the most deportations, but nobody fought about it because he gave people the chance to fight about it. You know, they went to court, so they got their case heard, they lost or whatever, but they still got a chance. And with the current president, they're not doing any of that stuff. They're just being, you know what, you weren't born here, bye. We don't want to hear it, whether you have any danger back home, whether it's legit or not, or whatever. They just don't want to hear it and they want to send you back home. And that's the major grievance.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. And Maria Savaleta, we only have about a minute and a half left, but I would love to hear from you on that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I don't have kids, but I have nieces and nephews, and I feel like if my nieces and nephews were to be without their father, without their mom, out of nowhere, obviously, that's something that would have a huge impact in their lives. And so when I see children, my clients' children, or even the children that are my clients, I don't want them to go through that either. So I think for me, it's like I said, a conviction of I want to use the law as a tool for justice to help you navigate this process and hopefully have a positive resolution. And I think I don't I wouldn't it's a hard time, but I think that a lot of us are doing everything we can with what we have to be able to be together and help community.
Well, you're both such an inspiration to me. And in our last 30 seconds here, where can people go for support? What are some reliable sources?
Well, I've already mentioned the ILRC. I do believe they have amazing resources, the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, the Family Preparedness Plan. If you're looking for an attorney, search through the AILA Attorney Referral Service. Also, the American Bar Association, I mean, California Bar Association, sorry, has a lawyer referral service. Be careful of, notario fraud. Oftentimes, notarios let people believe that they are attorneys because in their countries of origins, only attorneys can be notarios. That's not the case in the US. So be careful of notario fraud. And if you're a student, go to your campus social worker or dream center.
Anything else, Rolando?
No, I mean, the only thing is if you're going to read stuff, read it from sources that are credible, like the National Immigration Project, AILA, other organizations similar to it, because there's a lot of rumors and there's a lot of individuals taking advantage of other people because of this, of what's going on.
Yes, exactly. We need credible sources. We are out of time. Thank you so much, immigration attorneys Maria Savaleta and Rolando Fuentes. This is Maria Hall from the Lawyers Guild Show. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. Stay strong, please. We're all each other's inspirations.
Heaven is on the earth.